everybody. Welcome to the show today. Of course, you know, we are moving things around and people are getting fixed in positions. And we are, you know, it's kind of a jostle. You know, it's one of those football plays where you run out on the field and nobody's really sure what you got to do. But we're going to make it work. I'm here. I'm glad to be here. Hey, you know, I think Steve will be joining the program maybe sometime later. He's also on, you probably heard his shows Off the Beaten Path, of course, and National Intel Report. But I'm sitting in here again, and I'm glad to be with you. A whole lot of news out there. So many things that it's almost impossible to dig into. I heard Tulsi Gabbard talking about the dire condition in Maui. And, of course, she served four terms there. She is very concerned about the culture, the people, what has happened. I know there are a lot of talks about the things that we have, speculated about. Directed energy weapons, fire starters of many types. Of course, high winds that could have been directed. We don't know exactly all the circumstances. I'm watching the story develop as you are, and I'm praying for those people because, again, we're seeing another one of these atrocious affairs that is suspicious, to say the least. And I know they're after that land there. There's been a lot of talk about that land. Tulsi Gabbard had said that these people have a culture. They have a historical connection to all of this. They don't want to sell the land. They don't want to turn this into one of Oprah Winfrey's 15-minute cities, you know, and one of these things that is going to become a tourist attraction for the New World Order's Eat Bugs lifestyle. And, you know, I'm all in favor of helping these people in Hawaii the best we can right now get to the bottom of what's happened there. As you know, you probably remember we had a huge fire out where I live, pretty close to us anyway, the Marshall Fire, which was south of Boulder. And I've had Virginia Farver on, who's a really good friend of mine, talking about what happened there. In this case, you know, the same situation where they say the power lines were overloaded due to high winds and this very cold weather that they had. This is almost a year ago now during, let's see how long. It's been quite a while, actually. They've had all these problems that they have had relative to the cold weather that should have never really incited a kind of fire like they had the last winter. And we've had a lot of problems here with the same situation. These houses looking like they burned from the inside out. Trees still standing around out there. And a lot of valuable real estate in this area along the south border of Boulder and Denver and that highland area there where those bluffs are. The in-car weather location they're building there is right above all that area overlooking that plateau. And you have to wonder who is really behind all of this. And I have the questions like a lot of us do that we don't really know. So, you know, if you're out there and you have some ideas you want to pipe up, we'll talk about it. I'm not really prepared to talk about it a lot yet. I didn't really expect. I thought we were going to have Jim Fetzer filling in. He is not ready yet. I kind of like Fetzer. I know a lot of people. You know, I like his work for the most part, at least that he's optimistic in some ways. But he's also, he tries to be as analytical in many things that he does. And I think he's going to be a great contribution to the network. But we got to keep it going, friends. That's why I'm here. That's why the great people there at the station, at the network are operating. And that's why we're continuing. We need every possible hand on deck right now because we are up against what you're seeing. They're planning to take down just about everything as fast as they possibly can. And that means the borders are coming down, the power is going to go out, the food supply is going to interrupt. You're going to have a lot of chaos. You are going to have a lot of people marching around with what you might call civil authority who have no business doing that kind of thing and exerting their pressure on the people out here in the homeland who provide everything for them. And we've been talking about taxes. Excuse me just a second here. kind of had to clear my throat. I was like Wolfman Jack eating a popsicle when the phone rang to come on the air. But anyhow, now there are a lot of people out there who are Ken Horn authoritarians, and they're going to want to jump in and take over like these kinds of psychopaths do in these conditions. And we have a lot of things happening that we need to be paying attention to, and all of us. Friends, you are very important. Don't discount your importance to talking to your neighbors, getting ready, getting prepared, getting networked, and getting ready to go with a lot of what's going on, because we are up against a very, very big and formidable force, I guess you would call them, of dangerous psychopaths and people who have no plan and no respect for your Constitution, your freedoms, or God himself. You know, these are ruckus minded people creating fracases. Okay, you know that. Okay, so we talked about what's happening, what happened in Maui, and still investigating. Now, like Tulsi Gabbard, you know, I don't vote Democrat hardly ever. I mean, I have once in a while in the past for somebody I did like. Like, I would have voted for Dennis Kucinich if I was in Ohio, but they gerrymandered him out of an office and removed his district. I think I may like to support RFK Jr. That doesn't mean I don't like Trump, but I think RFK Jr. would be a great attorney general, to be honest with you. I think he has the ability to handle law enforcement, which is direly needed right now, to go up against these people. And it would be nice if somebody who was a conservative was the president, and I think RFK Jr. would be best suited as attorney general, which is what his father did, Bobby Kennedy. And but he was placed in a very difficult situation because his brother John F. Kennedy was assassinated. I think, as most of you know, that he knew very well what happened, and this is the reason why he wanted to get into the presidency to change what was taking place under LBJ. He was a very evil and wicked man. You know, I can talk a little bit about vice presidents. Going all the way back to the Lincoln assassination, by the way, there was another man named Johnson, Andrew Johnson, who was, I believe, involved in the assassination with John Wilkes Booth. And we will probably see that, you know, as you look at this, and I'll show you some things about that if you want to talk about the Lincoln assassination. It's another one of those areas of things that I've done a lot of extensive investigation. I think it was an inside job. And because John Wilkes Booth left his calling card by his signature, and I've had the handwriting analyzed by an expert, a guy who worked for the Colorado Bureau of Investigation, a grand old man, actually, quite a fellow. I liked him. We got along very well. He would not take a fee at all, and the only thing I could do is take him out to lunch, and he bought a hamburger at a very expensive restaurant. You know, that's all he wanted. He was just a great guy, but he looked at the handwriting of the John Wilkes Booth diary, and he also looked at the calling card, a lot of other letters that I had rounded up with John Wilkes Booth's handwriting. There's, oh, I don't know, 14 or 15 letters that he had written to people that are still around that you can actually make copies of. And they made copies of these letters, and he could identify the handwriting of John Wilkes Booth pretty easily. And yes, there was never any controversy about it. John Wilkes Booth left his calling card in the mailbox at the National Hotel for Andrew Johnson the very day, within hours of the time of the assassination. It was like one of those calling cards that had a photograph on one side, and on the other side you could write on it, and or had information. I think it was a photograph, carte blanche or whatever they call those things. I don't know. But, you know, they had he left this in the mailbox for Andrew Johnson, a guy by the name of George Atzerodt. He was a German fellow who was also hung with the conspirators, by the way, was living in the National Hotel with him, not with Johnson, but I think directly above him or below him. He was right there nearby where Johnson was. It wasn't a mistake. Browning, the man at the office, at the desk clerk, said no. That wasn't placed in the wrong box. It was directed directly towards Vice President Andrew Johnson by Booth himself this afternoon at about 2 o'clock. He and Harold, I think, had come in, and he had handed him that card. The card read, and you can see it. Go look for John Wilkes Booth's calling card. Look up on online, and you'll see the calling card. It's up there. It's part of the National Archives. It's very real. It said, Don't Wish to Disturb You, Are You In? John Wilkes Booth. And then he has kind of a little insignia with a circle and an eye underneath it. Very strange kind of a insignia on the bottom. And that card was found later on. And it was very true that John Wilkes Booth had tried to meet with Andrew Johnson just hours before the assassination. Okay, that's a good lead right there that I think we need to look into. Now, you may not like Mary Todd Lincoln, okay, but she had an extremely accurate sense of character that Abraham Lincoln said he had learned to rely on. He said she was right about Salmon Chase. She was right about Douglas, obviously. She knew Douglas. Douglas actually courted Mary Todd. So this was, you know, the whole story between Douglas and Lincoln is a patent place in Springfield, Illinois. Really, it is. But being both of them, you know, Mary and Stephen Douglas both being little Napoleons, yeah, you could see that wasn't going to last very long. So she broke up, had no intent of getting involved with Douglas. He was a Democrat anyway, and pro-slavery, and her family was Whig. And so as a result, she was much more attracted to that gawky-looking man over there who doesn't know what to do with his hands wearing the green suit. Who is that? Lincoln? Lincoln? That's what Douglas was thinking. She's taking an interest in Lincoln? But Lincoln said himself that she had a very intense and very, very sharp perception of people. She was right about Billy Herndon. She was right about Selma Chase. She was right about McClellan. She was right about Douglas. She was right about a lot of people who she knew were phony. And she would tell Lincoln this. And, you know, you would think Lincoln had some pretty good discernment, and he did in matters of law and justice. But sometimes personalities, Lincoln was a little inept at. You know, Lincoln said, she's been right on every time. She seems to know who these people are. She can tell who they are. And she also predicted that Grant had political aspirations. You know, this was after the speech on the 11th of April, I think it was, when Lincoln spoke from the White House, and Grant came out and spoke as well. So, excuse me, this popsicle I was eating is kind of getting to me, but now I'm going to be ready. I'm ready for anything. I'm ready for action. Getting back to the story about the whole thing with the Lincoln assassination, Andrew Johnson took over the presidency, of course, and it was a real fiasco. Just, I don't know how many months it was later, July, I think it was, of 1866, a evil general from the South who should have been hung for war crimes came to the White House, and he was visiting with Andrew Johnson, who seemed to be showing him obedience in some strange way. And they were talking for a while, eating, wining, and dining in the White House. That Confederate general was a fellow by the name of Albert Pike. You may know who Albert Pike is. If not, you could go see the statue about 13 blocks away from the White House of Albert Pike, famous Freemason, Grand Wazoo, if you like. What was he? One of the great overseer eyeball Wazooies of the Freemasons, wrote the book Morals and Dogma. He was considered the top Freemason in America, and one of the founders of the Knights of the Golden Circle. Ralph Epperson, who you may know, believes he was involved in starting the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan. So, you know, that's neither here nor there. But you see that Johnson had some really bad connections. Now, getting back to the impeachment, I'm coming all the way around, aren't I? I'm kind of like watching a train go by, you know, an old freight train when you're at a crossroads. It does connect. It does connect, and there's an end to it, okay? Just be patient. I'll get back to the impeachment, but this is what happened during that impeachment. All these things came up about what Johnson had done. He had denied the Freedmen Act. He had denied did everything he could to keep the former soldiers and freedmen from being able to vote in the 14th Amendment, which has been constructed and misconstructed way out of control, as you know. And I'm one of those people who does agree, yes, the 14th Amendment can be blamed for anybody not allowing aliens to come into their house and eat all their crackers. I mean, it's that out of control right now. They misuse it constantly. You read it. I'll even read it if we have to. It's not very lengthy, or let's put it this way, detailed. It's pretty much based on the post-Civil War ideology. They're even trying to use the 14th Amendment against Trump right now, believe it or not. But anyhow, that's another story, the 14th Amendment. I know some of you are constitutional experts, and you might want to pipe up and say some things about the 14th Amendment, and it's misused horribly. Lincoln wasn't around when the 14th Amendment was passed, okay? He was long gone. But Johnson had gotten himself into all kinds of trouble with Reconstruction. He had actually emboldened a lot of the very evil Northerners to continue to rape and pillage on their way out of the South. There were a lot of problems, of course, and then there were the people in the South who wanted to hold on to power, and this was a major concern. And General Albert Pike, Freemason, top dog, was in the White House in 1866. Now, you know, they put his statue up about 13 blocks away at the D.C. Masonic Hall. As I understand, they had to remove it because it was one of those statues that should have been targeted for removal. If there was one out there, his was one of them, I would say. And that's what you have. So you have a lot of those kinds of problems resulting. And as a result, what we had with that whole impeachment was that it came one vote shy of being passed. It was the only time an impeachment really came close to happening was when they tried to impeach Andrew Johnson. And from the floor, Senator Butler, who was a pretty brave, Union colonel during the war, well-known man, was saying that they were going to look into the assassination connections between Andrew Johnson and John Wilkes Booth. That's when the doors closed and they had the vote. Andrew Johnson escaped by one vote, okay? So I'm coming back to the idea of the impeachment issue. These things have happened before, and I believe we need to use this power. But it has never taken effect. The only time it had any real impact was when Richard Nixon resigned, fearing that his own party would turn on him back in 1974, after Watergate, as you recall. But anyhow, wrapping it all up, I'm saying this, that we're looking at a lot of problems right now with our entire republic coming apart. I strongly believe you should support an impeachment and stop these people immediately. We cannot wait until 2025, and we can't trust the election system. And yes, they are going to come after Trump, and they will throw him in prison if they can, and they will use the 14th Amendment to do it. They're talking about it already, saying that he is a criminal, and he has created an act of insurrection, therefore he could never hold office. All right, I think, let's see how much time we got. I think we got enough time to take one call. Mike is in Kentucky. Let's see if we can bring him up. Mike, are you there?
No. Now I am.
There you are. Yeah, there you are, buddy.
I called in as quick as I could, and you retracted what you said. Albert Pike's statue was removed because it was getting vandalized all the time. But back when the early days of Wikipedia happened, they had a Wikipedia page for that government square, I think is where it was at, and there are several statues there. Mm-hmm. I kept editing the Wikipedia page to say that Albert Pike's statue was there and putting a hot link to the article about Albert Pike. Well, the editors of Wikipedia kept taking it down over and over again. I mean, I got stubborn about it every few weeks.
Yeah, hang on, buddy. Hang on to that thought. We got another break. Wait, hold up there, Mike. Let's go get right back to you. Be right back.
Attention, freedom-loving patriots. Are you ready to dive deep into the principles that founded our great nation? Join me, Peter Serafin, and the Institute on the Constitution as we light the way to a brighter future with the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom. At liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom, you'll find a treasure trove of online courses on the U.S. Constitution, carefully crafted to empower you with knowledge to defend your rights and liberty. Whether you're a student, a history enthusiast, or just a concerned citizen, these courses are for you. Gain a comprehensive understanding of our Constitution's principles, the wisdom of our founding fathers, and how to apply them in today's world. As a special offer to our freedom-loving listeners of Republic Broadcasting Network, use coupon code RBN at checkout and get 20% discount on any course. Join the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom and be a part of the movement to uphold the values issues that have made our nation exceptional. Unleash the power of knowledge and protect what truly matters, our Constitution. Visit liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom today. Don't miss this incredible opportunity. Use code RBN for 20% off. Together, we'll be the beacon of freedom our founding generation envisioned. Liberty Lighthouse Classroom. Illuminating minds, empowering patriots.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Oh, yeah. Glad to be back with you. Right here on RBN, Steve Starr is sitting in again today. And as you know, we're going through some changes, and I'm just the fill-in guy. I'm always glad to be here when I can. Sometimes I oversleep during the day because I'm up so much late at night. But we have Mike still with us, I hope, in Kentucky. And, Mike, you were talking about the statue of Albert Pike in that area there and what happened. Are you still there, Mike?
Yeah, and the thing was erected, I think, in about 1901 or something like that, and it was still there until, I think, 2020, when the Jim Floyd riots had folks partially demolished it, and they had to have a removal act passed. That was passed by a female or woman senator, actual woman, I guess, not a simulated woman, but... And so they, you know, the removal, the House Resolution 1165, Albert Pike Statue Removal Act, was passed February 18th, 2021, to direct the Secretary of the Interior to remove the statue, even though it had already been, I think, put in storage because it was demolished and kind of on hold, or toppled or whatever, you know. So, and they were assessing the damage or whatever to try to determine what to do with it, but. The interesting thing about that, for probably from, it was before I joined Facebook, I started editing a few pages on Wikipedia, and I kept editing the Judiciary Square. I think I misspoke and said Government Square. I edited the Judiciary Square page on Wikipedia to keep putting a hot link back to the article about Albert Pike and his memorial, and Wikipedia kept taking it down and removing it from that article. Until finally, they just made it an article about the damn subway station.
Really? Wow.
That's how determined I was to make sure that it stayed up there. Yeah. And so it was kind of amusing that they did that, but that's not the first time I've had fun stuff happen on the Internet way before I joined Facebook to let me know, you know, to what to watch out for as far as dirty tricks. But... that they've been doing. I've been on there over since January 1st of 2010 after people sent me fake emails, a bunch of fake emails to join. But Now he had claimed to fame after he became editor for a Little Rock, Arkansas newspaper. He was advocating against the U.S. government for Native Americans, and so when the war between the states happened, he assembled a bunch of Confederate Native Americans against the U.S. government. And I saw the Confederate Cherokee exhibit. I don't know if it's still in place or not down in Cherokee, South Carolina, but there was a lot of Confederates that were Native Americans.
Yeah.
And they weren't fighting for anybody's slavery, but Pike left the political party, the Whigs, and joined the Know-Nothing Party because the Whigs would not make a stand pro-slavery. So the people that say the war between the states was not about slavery, you kind of have to be a little ignorant, you know, but yeah. 99% of the people that were fighting for the South did not fight for people's slaves to keep slaves. But it was still a major factor. I mean, you can't ignore that. There was even Jewish people in Charleston, South Carolina that fought. But yeah, that statue was the only statue, outdoor statue of a Confederate that was left up. And I think it's because after the war between the states in the 1870s, when he moved to Washington, D.C., he became the sovereign grand commander, poobah, whatever, of the Washington-based Supreme Council of the Scottish Rite. So that's why they kept him.
Yeah, it was interesting because here he is in the White House in 1866 with Andrew Johnson, and I mean, it's a very, very strange relationship at that point. You know, there was actually an anti-Freemason party in this country in the 1820s.
And 30s. Anti-usury. Yeah. It was all part of Andrew Jackson's ride to the presidency. Jackson was anti-Mason, at least for political reasons.
Yeah.
Johnson did not want to vote for the 14th Amendment, and that is part of the factors that led to him being impeached. He refused to ratify the 14th Amendment, so the Secretary of State set a precedent and ratified the 14th Amendment, and the same thing happened with the 16th Amendment. Philander Knox ratified it. The president did not have to sign it.
Yeah, that's a very interesting part of our history. And, you know, where I got involved with all this was looking at the Booth assassination of Lincoln. And part of the agreement was between Booth and Andrew Johnson that if Booth would take out Lincoln, Johnson would block the 14th Amendment. Booth's attitude was, if it's time to free the slaves, so be it, but they shall never be citizens to vote. You know, that was kind of his perspective as a Southerner. And so the whole thing was about the 14th Amendment and allowing that vote to take place. And that was kind of the theme of where I was investigated. I'm not confirming all that, but, you know, that was kind of how I got into it. Now, when Todd, I was just going to say, though, Mike, kind of knitting together where we were going, when Mary Todd saw that, she was convinced that Johnson was part of the plot. She said, what was that card doing in Andrew Johnson's box? She came after that. That's when it all came apart. We'll come right back. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with more of this interesting conversation right here on RBN. Stay with us.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN.
free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Love the music, man. Sometimes I just like to kick back and jive a bit, you know, because it's easier than going back to work. But we got Mike in Kentucky, and I got to say this, Mike. My family came through the Cumberland Gap in the 1800s, 1805, settled out just out by Marylebone, that area. And my great-great-great-great-grandfather fought in the Revolutionary War. He was at both Valley Forge and at Yorktown. He wasn't a big wig, as far as I know, saved Washington's life or anything. But the family settled there in Kentucky. And my great-great-grandfather was a dentist there back in the days. And, of course, Kentucky tried to remain neutral in the Civil War, but then ended up in the South for a while and then quickly came over to the North. And he had a dentist shop there, and in his dentist shop, it read his name as a dentist, and it had a warning underneath. It said, "Warning, the Yanks are coming."
Well, and you brought that up. Now I've got another rabbit trail.
Okay, another rabbit trail, yeah.
Well, I had a paralegal that couldn't find a Kentucky Historical Society's journal. It was on microfilm in a library in Lexington. He looked in two different libraries, UK and the public library. And the specific volumes talking about the parallel neutrality resolutions, one in the House and one in the Senate and State of Kentucky, was that if the Union invaded, they would side with the South, but that they were to remain neutral. They didn't want to, you know, be involved in killing each other.
Right.
So Union came in and invaded Frankfort. So the intent of the legislature was if that happened, then it would go for the South. But they never got to finish. The two resolutions or laws or whatever they were concurrent. I actually was able to find a copy of that Kentucky Historical Society journal on microfilm in our local library, but I thought that was curious that it had disappeared from a couple of libraries. It's like they're really trying to, this was in the 1990s, pre-internet. So, you know, the other thing that I noticed was missing was the third or fourth, the last volume of executive orders from John Fitzgerald Kennedy was missing from our local library, which had that executive order 11,110 monetizing the silver. It was gone. So, wouldn't been where it was at, it wouldn't been real hard for somebody to crack a window and throw it out the back of the library and then go get it, and leave with it. But things get lost all the time. I've in my adventures in the 90s trying to look stuff up that I heard on shortwave or For the People, I'd hear some stuff, and I'd go, I can go look this up in the library. And it's interesting, it's stuff that would be missing, or that I found, and then later it would be missing when I went back to take a photograph of it. It's kind of this empire is so weak, it has to censor things, because it doesn't want people to know.
Right.
But Robert E. Lee, Jeff Davis, there's a book out, Sam P. Chase, on the $10,000 Federal Reserve note, part of the Chase Manhattan crew originators, I guess, but he was a Supreme Court justice, and he basically said that we can't try Jefferson Davis because he could win in court what he lost on the battlefield and walk right back into the White House of the Confederacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so they never tried Jefferson Davis. It's in a book called The Long Surrender, if anybody wants to look it up. So
that's interesting, yeah. I've looked into Jefferson Davis a little bit and gained a little more respect for him than I thought I had because, he actually had written as a state representative, I think a state senator from Mississippi. He urged people of the South not to get into the war. He said, I don't think we can win it. Sam Houston was right, too. He had warned Texas, we don't need this. He said, guys, you got a sweet deal here. Don't mess it up. It was a little bit like Rhett Butler in Gone with the Wind. Remember that when he was telling all the Southerners? He said, guys, we got it fixed here. I think we're pretty well set here without getting in Yankee boys to come down here, and they were, come on, Rhett, we got to fight. He didn't get into it, and then he went off. He made a lot of money, and then he came back at the very end. He said, I'm going to enlist in the Confederate Army. And they said, Rhett, you were right. Why are you getting into the Confederate Army now? And he said, well, if my neighbors are all going to get an ass kick at night and ass whipping, I better line up and get mine, or I'll never be able to live with you. So he got in the Confederate Army at the end, you know what I mean? And took his abuse like the rest of his neighbors, but it was kind of an interesting interesting look at the mind pattern over there at that time. And friends, it was a horrible affair. We could really dig into it, but the situation there's a lot of history that's missing, and just like Stalin airbrushed all the people out of the photographs that he didn't like after a while, we're losing our history somehow too, aren't we, Mike?
And there's all kinds of stuff that's been censored out of that. I mean, here, they're all during the Cold War, the Russians were, or the Soviets were allowing experimentation on their people by Western drug companies with vaccines. And then we're sending over all this wheat so that their political infrastructure doesn't starve to death. And they're going around killing farmers and trying to get rid of independent farmers. Thomas Jefferson said a nation of independent farmers would be unconquerable. So here in the United States, they've conquered the farmers with corporations, debt and no right to repair their equipment, and they've just about gotten rid of all independent farmers because, self-sufficient people are not easy to boss around. They're ungovernable. You can't mess with them.
Yeah, they're looking out for their own and their neighbors. Yeah, I appreciate it, Mike. Thanks. Hey, buddy, I got another call. Hey, there's some more I'd like to talk to him about, but I got another call coming in. It's my buddy James from Vancouver. Let's see if we can get James up. James, are you there?
Good afternoon. According to my book, it was George Washington Lafayette Bickley who started the Knights of the Golden Circle.
Ah, okay. That's good then. Tell me a little bit more about him. I understood, of course, reading a lot of the things that I'd looked at, that if Albert Pike wasn't the leader, he was definitely involved. But what else you got on that?
Well, he should have been involved, but they credit Bickley, but the Golden Circle was the territories of Mexico, Central America, the Caribbean, and the southern states that would be in this Golden Circle if you look at the map. And, of course, there was going to be slavery. And he wrote a letter to Abraham Lincoln expressing his distaste with Lincoln's handling of the government. But by the way, I understand from some researchers, Lincoln and his buddies were actually communists, and they were aligned with Karl Marx. Somehow.
Well, Marx was a few years later, of course. He really hadn't, at that time,
Marx,
I think.
Marx sent letters to Lincoln. This is a fact. There's a correspondence between the two. So, the reprobates from the 1848 revolution in Europe that didn't work came over to America and decided that they'd try their revolution over in the United States. This is what I'm hearing, and it sounds quite interesting. And it obviously, you know, it's interesting. Let me tell you, you have a guy like Lincoln, and he's got the Lincoln Memorial, and you have a guy like Pike. Well, he had a statue or something, right? So, you know, some would say that the biggest criminal got the biggest memorial. So,
well, that's hard to say. You know, I have a tendency to defend Lincoln because, you know, I would think he'd be embarrassed with the Lincoln Monument in Washington and all the hoopla. But Lincoln was not a Freemason. Neither was Seward.
Yeah, right.
Seward ran as an anti-Freemason candidate, and so did Fillmore, actually, before he became a know-nothing. And so there were a lot of people against Freemasons getting the kind of power. And Lincoln had been invited to, you know, join lodges. I don't know if you've had these experiences. I have. A couple of people have invited me to come by, and I've said no. I really don't think I want to go there, because Lincoln had said this, and Mary affirmed this as well, that he said there's too much for me to learn about their symbolism and their manners and their order and all that. I don't have time for it. He kind of used that excuse, but I think he saw that he didn't want to get into it. But yet, oddly enough, the Freemasons had built these huge monuments to Lincoln, which you know, look at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. If you've ever been to Springfield and seen his mausoleum, I mean, it's adorned with these amazing statues of people fighting, and it's complete marble inside. I mean, but you know, I mean, so I know what you're saying, where you're going with a lot of this, actually. But you know, it's interesting that Albert Pike ascends into the power there after Lincoln is dead. It's not even 16 months after Lincoln was assassinated. He's in the White House, and this guy should have been hung as a Confederate, as a cruelty. A personnel.
He was a bad guy.
Yeah, he was a bad guy. He really was. He was very, very brutal. And you know, and yet he's being honored today, as you say, from so many different places. But any other comments there?
Well, yeah, I was going to say that during the American Revolution, you had Masons from the Revolutionary side visit the lodges of the British side, and the British side visiting the lodges of the American side right during the Revolution. So,
yeah, sure did. Well, Washington was a Freemason as well. Yeah,
The code of the Freemasons allows for things like this because they have a certain code of honor that they can do this kind of thing. So,
right, that supersedes their oath to the Constitution, as we've seen. And Washington had written letters, and you have to remember that the Freemasons, during that same period of time, 1776, when Weishaupt announced his Illuminati, a Bavarian Illuminati, that was a very big moment. And they called it, from that point on, a lot of these people, Illuminized Freemasonry. And they asked Washington what he thought about it. There's some writings here I don't have any handy, but you can do some research on that. Washington talked about the Illuminized Freemasonry as it being a little bit different from what he understood than the Masonry that he had grown up in and been accustomed to. You know, those are all questions about personalities that we really have to dig into and read a lot, you know, and keep open to what we're hearing, even about our founders there in Freemasonry, Jefferson and other people, of course, and Ben Franklin, you know, I mean, obviously, he had his Hell House dark side. There's no question about that.
Yeah, he was a top, he was 33rd degree, I believe.
Yeah, he was way up and into all this stuff, and we have some of our founding fathers have a lot of serious questions. But there was that anti-Freemason party that Seward belonged to, and many others, and for quite a while. And the people who said we want to get rid of this this operation in government because it is a dangerous situation here, and I still agree with that. And I think you see it being carried on after the assassination. One thing that I would always say about the South was, from what I've read, you know, what had happened after the first inaugural address, Lincoln said, we're not going to assail the South unless, you know, prevailed upon to do so. He said, let's step back. Let's take our time. Let's see if we can find something that, you know, ways to work. I think he said something to the effect of, charity, you know, Christianity, good faith. You know, there's no need to push this issue. We can still accommodate our present disorder. In other words, he was saying, let's keep negotiating. And the Southern yeomen at this time in April, and actually in February and March, were already putting in crops. And these were people who, they weren't plantation economy people. They might have had a slave family, or they might have been just farmers. And they didn't see the slave plantation economy like a Walmart competing with mom and pop store. They didn't see that in their interest. They went back to work. And so all the secession movements that were really boiling and burning before the election just started to fade away. And all of a sudden, everybody was saying, look, you know, people are, you know, the Southern yeoman farmers were saying, you know, there's no need to fight. And they were thinking, no, we got work to do. We got, like, the farmers back to that.
Well, yeah.
We got things. Yeah. So they weren't really involved in this.
Yeah. The South has three growing seasons, so they're right. Busy all year round, whereas the North only has one. South is bringing in way more money.
Yeah,
they were in the North.
Yeah, they could sell a lot, and there were adjustments in the tariffs and the problems that needed to be made. And of course, there was a tremendous amount of infrastructure tax on the South. But those were the kinds of things. Lincoln was willing to pass the Corwin Amendment, which would have allowed, but he knew that they weren't going to take that. And then there was what they called the Crittenden Compromise. Neither of these worked to try to stop the war. And then when Fort Sumter happened, then there was problems. Because now you would think that Lincoln would have invaded like George Bush did immediately after 9/11. Remember, he actually gave the orders, I think, for the invasion of Afghanistan on September 10th. And then, I mean, it would have been an overnight attack, but actually the North did not invade the South or attack the South, if you like, until July at Bull Run, and they got beat pretty bad there, you know. So it was about 3.5 months after Fort Sumter. So it took all that time.
Lincoln actually invaded Maryland and one other state first before he invaded the South.
Well,
he actually invaded the Union, but
he had to impose the arbitrary arrest. Yes, are you talking about the arbitrary arrest and all that?
Well, he rounded up a whole lot of people that I don't think were really guilty of anything. So
yes, most of them weren't. Absolutely. You know, I think there was something. I come to the number of about 14,563, and that's roughly between something.
It sounds to me like a pretty communist kind of. Deal. This is what you get in a communist country is mass arrests. But go ahead.
Well, that, you know, these kinds of things you might say, you know, they've asked these questions, and Tom DiLorenzo, who's a Jesuit agent, you know, wrote the book, The Real Lincoln, which is really a real farce, to be honest with you. He's a Loyola professor. And so a lot of people read a lot of that, and they don't go back and check their history. But of the 14,563 arbitrary arrests, these are people who are arrested without writ of habeas corpus, is what you're referring to. Yeah, some of them stood trial. About 3-4% stood trial of a jury of their peers and were found guilty. Some of these people were apprehended and released within 24 hours. Some let's say they stayed a week or so. Some within maybe 2 months. Some were held a lot longer, and some were. I honestly believe a lot of them were mistreated. There's no question about it. You know, but this is the kind of thing that happens when something like these events take place. So we need to have a heads up, because this is the kind of thing that can go into effect. We want to keep our freedoms, but there were people, I personally hate to say this, but I would like to apprehend a lot of the people in the mainstream media right now for recklessly endangering our public and lying to us the way they have. These people should be arrested. I don't give a damn about their claims of freedom of speech. You know, the First Amendment does not allow us as journalists to recklessly endanger the public. That is not there.
Right.
You know what? You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. You cannot cause problems with free speech. Now, I am very, very lenient. You know, James, towards journalists who make mistakes and then correct them. I mean, for example, Alex Jones, you know, he talked about Sandy Hook, came back and changed it. He even offered to have those people come on and be interviewed. You know what I mean? That is one thing. It's another thing. All right, buddy. Yeah, I appreciate it. You're welcome. Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, kind of wrapping it up, though, that free speech is... there's no such thing. It carries a price. Hey, friends, We've got to come right back after the break, and we will. I got David, I think, in Mass hanging on here. Okay? Stay tuned.
What if Extendivite really works, but you find that hard to believe and you spend precious time looking for someone to say, just try it? I have my help today because of Extendivite, and if I did not take a leap of faith and try it, well, I would be on disability today. Take one bottle of Extendivite as suggested for 60 days to find out for yourself. No need to stop any other meds you may be on. You know by now that they are not working for you. Before the 60 days are up, I know that you will feel Extendivite working for you and will want to take another bottle. Life is too short. Get your Extendivite today. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Antelope Hill Publishing is America's leading publisher of dissident books, bringing you a wide variety of new translations and original works on every subject, from the funding behind the transgender movement to firsthand memoirs of World War II previously inaccessible to English-speaking audiences. We publish books that mainstream publishers won't touch, full of information that challenges the political status quo. Whether you count yourself as a political dissident, student of history, connoisseur of philosophy, or enthusiast of exciting and thought-provoking fiction, you owe it to yourself to check out our catalog. With exclusive offerings like The Transgender Industrial Complex, Solzhenitsyn and the Right, The Open Society Playbook, Opioids for the Masses, and many more, there's something for everyone, and new titles are added every month. Check out our catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com and use code RBN Readers 2023 for 10% off your order. That's RBN Readers 2023 at antelopehillpublishing.com.
No, I don't do it as well. Oh no, this is sunglasses. That's what it is. Yeah, I remember this one. Yeah, see, that's how faded my music memory is these days, I guess. Anyway, let's see. You know, we were talking about some things. We were going off on different avenues in history, talking about the Albert Pike, the Freemasons, the beginning of the country, and where we got to now. But, you know, we're always open, and I'm going to keep winging it here, and we'll just kind of take it as it comes. Let's see. We got Dave in Massachusetts, and let's see what he has to say. Dave, are you there?
I'm here, Steve. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Yeah. Hello to Mike from Kentucky. I call it, I hope the folks in Kentucky forgive me, but I call it Kentuck. I don't
Kentuck.
Call it Kentucky. I just call it Kentuck. Okay?
Kentucky
you
land.
Know, Steve, I went through training, basic training in AIT at Fort Knox, Kentucky, when I was in the Army. I'm classified as a Vietnam veteran. even though I never set foot in Vietnam, but I was in during the war years, and ironically enough, I was stationed at Fort Knox, Kentucky with John Stadtmiller. This was back in around like 1972, 1973, and we were both in for just a couple of years, and John never set foot in Vietnam either, so we have a similar kind of history. But that's not the real reason I called in, though. What prompted me to call in, Steve, was Mike from Kentucky, and I've been talking about the Albert Pike Museum and Albert Pike statue, I meant to say. And they took down the Christopher Columbus statue in the north end. I'll tell you about that maybe in a minute if we have time. But what I wanted to bring to your attention, in case you're not aware of it, I suspect Mike from Kentucky is probably already aware of it, but I hang out in Lexington, Massachusetts a lot, Steve. And I don't live in Lexington, but I hang out there a lot because I used to live in Bedford, right next to Bedford, Massachusetts, on the Battle Road up there, the Great Road and everything. And Bedford's right next to Lexington. But there's a museum there in Lexington called the National Heritage Museum. It's the Scottish Rite Masonic Museum and Library. And, of course, it's got to be, of course, number 33, Marrott Road in Lexington. It's just an incredible resource. Everything's digitalized. You can do all kinds of online research out of the National Heritage Museum. It's the supreme command of the Scottish Rite in North America. And full disclosure, I'm not a Mason. If anybody falsely, I'm famous for being misunderstood, Steve. But if anybody falsely would conclude that I'm a Mason because I'm talking about the Masonic Museum, I'm not a Mason, and I like to think I'm a real Christian, Steve, and I like to think real Christians aren't Masons. But anyways, you know who used to hang out there, and I don't know how he's doing. He's had health issues. Is James Perloff was a habitué. Used to hang out in. Is there a commercial?
Yeah, I've interviewed James Perloff. Hey, we got another break coming up, I think, here. Hang in there, buddy. We will return.
Found a road to nowhere, and I'm trying to escape. I am back when I heard thunder, but I'm down to one last breath. And will it let me say, let me say, I'm 6 feet from the edge and I'm...
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names. Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.